So now we're web streaming, and we're formally beginning the meeting. It's about 10 after 7 on Monday evening in New York. And on the call at this point are myself, Leslie Kagan, Pete Bramson, George Barnstone, Carol Spooner, Janice K. Bryant, Ray LaForest, Rob Robinson, A.C. Bird, Teresa Allen, and we're expecting Charles to get on, and we're not sure about the others.
No, not sure about Dave Verdi?
No. Okay. No, I haven't heard from him. Hello?
Hello?
Charles?
Yes.
Hi, welcome. We're just getting started.
Thank you.
Okay. So, and we also have Terry Brocious, our national election supervisor, and Dan Coughlin on the call. So, and the purpose of the meeting tonight is specifically to deal with several issues related to the elections, both the concerns or the issues addressed in the Kevin Fink letter, which I hope everybody got and read, and also a particular issue around the question of where the ballots are being counted, although I hope everyone saw the memo from Terry that in part addressed that. So what I then, because Ray has a time crunch here, he has requested that we start with the waivers issue, which actually is the first issue addressed in the Kevin Fink memo, so it kind of fits pretty neatly. So is that all right with everyone if we just start with that?
Yes.
Okay.
This is Teresa.
Yes.
I do want to put the EFT issue on the agenda. I also want to talk briefly about the committee that we decided to form, the, what do you call it, oversight committee at our last national board meeting.
You mean the local committees?
Yes.
Okay. Can we put the, there were three issues in the Kevin Fink letter. One is the waivers issue. One, second was the membership list access. I'm not sure if there's anything controversial there that we need to talk about. And then the third thing was the minimum membership contribution, and maybe we should put the electronic fund transfer issue there.
Yes.
Okay. And then what was the other thing you mentioned, Teresa? I'm sorry,
the
local committees.
In September, we decided to have local committees, but while we're at it, you may want to look in your bylaws because my lab is asking me, our election supervisor is asking us if these committees that we are starting, if they aren't the same as what is mentioned in the bylaws.
Okay, so let's get to that when we get to that.
Okay.
Okay, so on the waiver issue, I'm sorry I didn't ask somebody in advance to sort of present this issue. Does anybody feel that they could sort of present what the options are? Kevin laid out several options, four options, about how we could move given the complication around the waiver issue. Does somebody want to open this?
Can we just make a motion to adopt one of the four elements, or do we have to go over all of the elements, Leslie? This is Rob.
No, we don't have to go over all the elements.
I'd like to move that we adopt the second option that Kevin recommended.
Rob?
Which, yes?
Oh. My proposal was to make another option that is not one of the four that he presented.
Oh, okay.
Well, Rob has, the way you do it is Rob makes a motion and
right.
You can make a substitute
right.
Motion if you like.
Right. Let Rob is in the middle of his sentence, so let him finish. Let him put it out. And then if there's a second, it will be on the table, and then you can, as Carol just said, you can make a substitute motion.
My motion is that we adopt the second alternative, which is that we go to court and request that the courts allow the local advisory boards to be responsible for adopting the waivers and the criteria for waivers. That's, in other words, that we vote to adopt the second alternative, which entails going back to Judge Sabraw. That's it.
Is there a second?
Leslie?
Hold on 1 second. Is there a second to that motion?
Second. This is Pete.
Pete seconded. Okay. Ray, you want to say
Well, I actually wanted to say that I believe that the this is misstating one of the choices, because basically the choices are that we either don't have your waivers, which He himself said that it was a, he was just stating what our options were. One of them was to ask the judge to accept the notion that exact that the lab would well, pretty much what the national board presented the last time. The problem with this, though, is that we need no less than 10 days for the judge to take a look at this, which means that practically what we would have would be a non-existent decision. The 21st is a deadline for us to, for anybody to become a member. And today's the 17th. So, and this is why I was suggesting, I was going to propose something that, that applied specifically only to individuals seeking waivers rather than to the whole population.
So do you want to put that out? I mean, maybe you want to offer that as an amendment to Rob's proposal.
They're pretty sure.
Oh, I see. Ray?
Yes.
Do you want to spell out what your proposal is?
Well, my proposal simply would ask the judge, because effectively, as I said, we need 10 days minimum for the judge even to look at a request for waivers. And clearly, and the 21st is a deadline for anybody to become a member. So I was going to, I'm making a proposal that we ask the judge to extend the amount of time available for the individuals seeking waivers for as long as period as the new byline allows without changing the final date.
And do you have a date on that?
Well, I actually had called to Mauritius to see if we could work something out specifically. Basically, we would go backwards and see if an individual was allowed to become a member. What is the latest that somebody can become a member and participate in the process without changing the actual deadline
mm-hmm.
for the process, for the election to take place?
Can I ask Terry to weigh in on this?
Yeah, we don't have firm plans for a deadline to get things to the printer and get the address labels prepared and so on. But I think realistically, December 5th, which is the deadline by which we hope to have a list of candidates, I mean, we're not going to be sending things off to the printer before we know who the candidates are. So the original notion, I guess, was to try and have the envelopes, you know, with the addresses printed on them ahead of time, but that's not essential. So I would think December 5th, realistically, would be feasible, although I can't say categorically because I haven't actually talked with the printer about that.
Terry?
Yes.
This is Carol. As I recall, from the close of nominations, which is December 5th, until the materials need to get to the printer, it's 21 work days. And during that 21 work day period is when the finalizing of the layout of everything that's going to be printed will be done, and also the finalizing of the mailing list. Is that, can you confirm that's correct?
21 days was the package. The point is, might it be possible to have the address labels put up, the addresses, you know, printed, laser printed onto envelopes late in the process, as opposed to, we're hoping to do that as the first thing because we'd be busy working on the layout for the
uh-huh.
candidate bios.
Uh-huh.
But it might be possible to push off that to later and work on the bios first. I don't see, Deborah Gomez, who has done this in the past for KPFA, was going to be doing all this, and just this last week, her job changed and she's not going to be able to do it. So I'm coming from zero, trying to get up to 60 very quickly because she was going to be doing it all. And now I have to figure out how it's going to be done. So I don't really know that information.
Right.
But I think since she said 21 day work days was the minimum, I would feel really reluctant to go less than that. And I'm guessing 21 work days, taking out weekends,
right.
means about a month, basically.
Right, to get things to the printer.
Right. Now, the thing is, this is obviously going to the mailhouse rather than to the printer.
Oh, right.
But the mailhouse will have to, will probably sub out the job for printing the envelopes to a separate print shop. That's the way most mailhouses do. They have standing arrangements to do their envelope printing at a particular place. So there can be even a longer lag time for getting the envelopes than for getting the candidate information. I just don't have that detail because I'm just now taking it on, and I didn't realize I was going to have to.
Leslie.
Yes.
So then, again, so I'm reaffirming that my motion would be the latest possible date to allow individuals who would qualify for waivers to do so, that the extension be granted them. The latest date that they would technically allow the election to take place properly and would extend that benefit to individuals who are seeking it.
Okay. So, Ray, I'm just trying to clarify, just so we can have an orderly process here. Are you offering this as amendment to Rob's motion, or are you offering this as a counter, a substitute?
Well, I was hoping Rob would withdraw his motion on the basis that it would not, technically, it's not workable.
Well, it is if you put the two together, Ray.
If you make this as an amendment, this is an amendment to Rob's motion, then it can work. Rob's motion is basically was go to the judge, right?
Fine.
I'm having trouble, Leslie, understanding what the relationship is between allowing waivers to be granted and making a determination that people can be members until some unspecified point into the future. I don't understand the relationship.
Well, I do.
Could you explain it
for me,
Carol?
Yeah,
the bylaws say the record date for membership is 45 days before the ballots are mailed, and we've got it all calculated out, and that makes the record date November 21st. Ray has pointed out that we don't have time for the judge to rule on whether or not we can or can't do waivers between now and November 21st. So Ray is asking that we ask the judge, as part of the request to grant waivers, that he extend for people receiving waivers only the record date to the last possible date where they could be included in the mailing, which Terry has suggested might be December 5th. Today's what, the 17th?
Today's the 17th, right.
17 plus 10 is 27th. That would give the local boards 5 and 3.
A little more than a week.
A little more than a week to rule on any waiver applications that they receive.
Leslie, so, this is Dave, because you're putting on a list.
Yes.
So what, if I can paraphrase, Ray, your amendment would be, the motion would be to ask the judge to permit the labs to grant waivers and to give them until December 5th to grant them.
Right. I just want Ray to confirm. Is that right, Ray?
Well, I want that extension specifically to be granted to those individuals. I mean, the election itself would be allowed to continue.
Yes. That's what Carol's saying.
Fine.
That the overall time frame would remain the same.
Fine.
The only thing that would change is that the granting of waivers would have an extension time. Instead of November 21st, it would be extended to December 5th.
Absolutely.
Okay.
This is Leslie. Could you put me on the...
Yes. Okay. So I have David and then Teresa.
Well, there's a couple of quick housekeeping questions. And first, a comment. I'm very sorry that I was late getting to this meeting. I was in an important client conference. And I understand there's a motion by Rob to go before the court for court approval to allow us to grant waivers, even though the way the bylaws are written, arguably, it doesn't give us the power to do that.
Right.
I think the waivers are an important element. I think we need to have them in place. I think we do have them in place. There's not a judge in the planet outside of maybe Washington, D.C., who would deny us this. I don't see any reason to hassle it. I think the idea of going to a court is just another complication when we don't need it. I just think that this board has got the authority to say, you know what, we're going to give people who apply waivers because there's some confusion at this end. We understand Terry's conservative, and I very, very much appreciate Terry's conservative analysis. That's his job. it's our job to institute policy, and our policy is to grant waivers where appropriate with a three-member committee from the lab, and that we should proceed on that basis. To hell with the court, to hell with delays. Let's give them till December 5th to have their, you know, waivers, since we'll reopen it and republicize it and do it and not hassle going to court. I don't see what all this mess is about. And I understand what it's about. I've heard the arguments, you know, in terms of what have been in writing. I just don't think that we need to be that anal about it. I think we can just go ahead and announce that waivers will be granted based on the ruling of the board of September 19th or 20th, whenever that vote was, and go forward. I mean,
okay.
That's it.
Okay, Teresa.
I would like to hear other people's thoughts on what Dave just said. And my question is, are we sure that we're not getting into trouble giving people that are applying for waivers more time than people who are actually putting in money for their membership?
Well, let me quickly answer that. I think that's one of the points of going to the judge, is that if the judge signs off on a plan like this, then I don't believe we would be getting in trouble. Some people might not like it, but
yeah,
but it would be hard for them to sue us over it.
No one's going to sue us.
Well, I'm just... Carol, go on.
Sorry.
It wasn't just Terry who had reservations about it. Kevin Fink did, too. And I think probably a number of us are aware through email or other means of people who would be very upset if we granted these waivers without court authority. My sense is that it's not anal, but that it's prudent to go to the judge to get authority for this, because I do not believe the bylaws give us the authority to do this as a matter of policy. It's actually a change in what the written specific language of the bylaws provides. And this board or any other board can't change the bylaws by adopting a policy. I think that Kevin is wise to advise us to ask the judge for authority to do this, to sign off on it. The major reason for that is, unlike Dave, I think lawsuits to challenge the elections are quite possible. And
I agree with that. I just don't think on that issue.
Well, I do think on this issue it's quite likely, given the controversy circling around the waivers, that there's a lot of controversy about it, and there are a lot of people who don't want us to do it. And that if we do it, contrary to strict interpretation of the bylaws, we're very likely to see an elections challenge, which would upset the election and cost money. So I think it's very prudent and wise to follow Kevin's advice and go to the judge. That's my view.
Okay, are there any other points, new points?
Ray, let me just
quite a number of people on this call who haven't said anything yet, so I just want to see if anybody else has something they want to add to this.
Terry here, I'd like to add something.
Okay, Terry, and then we'll go back to Ray.
The difficulty that I'm in is that I am obligated to certify election if they're conducting compliance with the bylaws, and there's now a legal opinion that Pacifica lawyer has produced saying, advising basically that waivers cannot be used without the permission of a court.
Right.
So if the board went ahead without going to court, I would be in a position of not being able to certify the elections,
mm-hmm.
Because there's actually a legal opinion sitting there. And if I were to certify the election, if you use waivers without going to court,
right,
then I would be sued as well. And I can't certify the election unless you have permission now that there's a legal opinion saying that you don't have authority.
Ray was next.
I wanted to say that since Carol said that Terry felt that it was an important issue, but he also felt that if he went to the judge, that it would be approved. Anyway, can I vote on this now? Because I have to step away from the phone right now.
Just wondering if we can all vote on this now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Please.
Okay.
So
we're voting on. Carol, are you prepared to read it back to us? Or should I read it? Should I say it? Okay. The motion, and I especially want Rob and Ray to pay attention. The motion is that the board of the Pacifica Foundation would go to the judge to seek permission to authorize the granting of waivers by LAB committees or by the LAB committees, and that we would further request an extension of the time frame for those people seeking waivers to December 5th.
Can I say that Rob's motion didn't say LAB committees? The bylaws say the local station boards. We did adopt a resolution in September setting up committees
committee.
In conjunction with...
Okay, I'm sorry, committees. The committees,
yes.
The local committees.
Leslie, I'm voting yes on this.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I want a clarification here.
Okay.
If I may, because I want to be very clear on what we're voting on.
Good.
Can we recapitulate that at the September meeting, we adopted a resolution that three-member lab committees, working in conjunction with the local election supervisors, would be the committees that would grant waivers based on applications. Is that the committee you're going to be asking the judge to authorize?
Yes.
All right.
It's a committee that we voted on, that we came to agreement on, and voted on at the September meeting.
Right. So we'd just be, that's what we said in September.
Right.
And we'd be asking the judge to approve that.
To approve that and further to extend the time frame for the extension, for the granting of waivers to December 5th.
For the record date of voters.
Right.
Who are voters by virtue of waiver. The record date may be as late as December 5th.
Yes, that's the
right.
Proper wording. Thank you.
Leslie. I would like a clarification, too, because as I understood it, there's a local election committee, and it didn't necessarily confine itself to three members. Three members was cited as members who could rule on the waiver.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that we would ask the judge for the local election committee, which consists of those three members, to do that.
That's not the policy we adopted in September, AC. We had two separate committees that we approved.
Okay, well.
One was a waiver committee and
okay.
one was a...
Well, no, I understand that.
Right. The waiver committee was the three-person committee.
Oh, the three-person. Okay,
right.
Good. All right.
Three lab members and the local election supervisor.
Okay.
Right.
Was what we said.
Call the question.
Okay, the question's been called. I'm going to just read the list down based on when people got on the call. So, Pete?
Yes.
George?
Yes.
Carol?
No.
Janet?
Yes.
Ray voted yes. Rob?
Yes.
AC?
Yes.
Teresa?
Abstain.
Charles?
No.
David?
Yes.
And myself, yes. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 yeses, 2 noes, and 1 abstention. So I believe that carries.
This is Terry. Can I have a clarification?
Yes.
At the New York meeting, and again here, the phrase "in conjunction with" I feel is not clear enough and leaves the door open for a lot of arguing.
Right.
And I would ask you to have a clear notion, I don't care what it is, but when you go to the judge, ask the judge to give specific, you know, have a specific plan, and maybe you could authorize a subgroup of your board to draft the thing that goes to the judge. Does conjunction mean that the local election supervisor and the two-member committee must agree on each waiver, or what does that mean?
Who has the final say?
If there's a dispute.
Right.
And you guys decide, but I just think we need clarity so that we're not arguing about this on December 4th about what does in conjunction mean.
Yeah. Well, does somebody want to make a proposal on this right now? I mean, part of what we are confronted with is trying to get this to the judge right away. So
I would propose, I'm not a member, but I would propose that in conjunction be interpreted to mean a majority of the three-member committee with the affirmation of the local election supervisor.
Yes. I disagree with that because, I would agree with the majority of the local election committee, but I don't think that it's necessary for the election supervisor to rule on that. I mean, how would you know, anyone else know, that's not a member of a station lab, station who needs to be waivered in the first place. You wouldn't know that. I mean, only the station would know that, and the labs would know that. So it doesn't need approval of the local election supervisor.
Leslie, this is Dave from the West, please.
Okay, you're next.
You know, I don't think that the personal knowledge of a local advisory board member is really what's being sought in the designation. I was not there at the meeting when I was on the meeting in that session in New York where this was decided. But my understanding of these three persons committees is not like, oh, I know that guy, it's Joe, it's okay, let him have his free vote. No, it's a matter of using the judgment of people to objectively assess whether or not this person is legitimately seeking a waiver because they're committed to Pacifica and just can't afford it. And so I don't think it requires any specialized knowledge of a lab member, merely the quality of judgment that the lab would elect these three people for. I think similarly, the independence of the election supervisor is equally valuable and frankly a bit juxtaposed to the perspective of the lab members. I don't see why not making it mandatory for it to be a unanimous vote of the four people, that is the three members and the election supervisor, in order for a waiver to be granted. I think waivers should be granted very liberally up to a point, but I think that if any one person who's elected by the lab to exercise their judgment, or the supervisor who's been hired because of their sound judgment, if any one of them have substantial reservations, that should be recognized.
Well,
if I have a question, this is Janice.
Yeah.
Is there a reason that, because it'll end up, and I haven't thought about this at all, but is there a reason that this can't just end up being four people and that the majority would, that Terry wouldn't have any more weight within this group than anyone else?
Terry's not in this group. It's the local election supervisor.
Okay, well.
Right, it's the three.
Right, okay.
Right.
Three
plus the local.
So is there a reason that that people wouldn't like to say, well, there are four of them, so the majority, there needs to be three out of the four? Is that not a way to do it? Because I don't know. I'm just asking. That seems to me to be the simplest way. But is that an unfair way of looking at it?
Should be one or the other, either three or four. What should it be, ladies and gentlemen?
Well, I don't know that it just seems to me like that would...
I suggest three out of four.
Yeah, because if you would have deadlocks, then I think you're opening up a can of worms. If it's got to be unanimous, I think that might lead to more fighting, if such a thing is possible that there can be more. But
I agree with you, Janice.
Carol. Okay,
Leslie, if I can just try to add something to
okay, Ray. I'm sorry, Rob, and then Carol.
Right. I would suggest two things. Number one is that each committee have some criteria that establish that basically say, we're not asking people to prove hardship. We are asking people to basically show us that they have an affirmative relationship with the station.
Yeah.
And that three out of four of that group have to vote in favor of the waiver for the waiver to be sustained. So I think it would be helpful for there to be some criteria so that people have some basis for saying, I have a relationship with the station. If people just show up and say, you know, I want a waiver, but they can't prove that they've had anything to do with the station, then I don't know how you're going to get people to vote for them. But so I think it's important that there both be some criteria for, you know, for the people requesting waivers to comply with, and I think it should be three out of four rather than unanimous.
Okay, Carol.
The major reason that has been articulated for opposition to waivers in this election is fear that the waivers may be granted in a partisan manner to advantage maybe one set of candidates over another. That's the fear that has been expressed loud and clear. It was expressed loud and clear at the September board meeting, and it's been expressed a lot in email. In order to allay that fear, I like the unanimous requirement that it be unanimous, because quite frankly, if somebody has made a good statement of why they care about the station and why they want to vote, there would be absolutely no reason to refuse to grant a waiver. None whatsoever. It should be obvious. But if it appears that there is some kind of hanky-panky going on, where certain candidates or certain applicants are being waived and others are not, then the unanimous requirement would be a safeguard against that. And I also feel that notwithstanding the fact that the court may grant our request and allow us to grant waivers this election, if there is a suspicion that the waivers were granted in a partisan manner, that will, the judge's prior approval of the waivers being granted will not protect us from lawsuits challenging the outcome of the election. I think that...
I'm sorry, will not... Why, there's some noise in the background. I didn't hear it.
Would not protect us from being sued to challenge the election.
If we can always be sued.
Yes, we can always be sued.
Over
I'm speaking, George. We can always be sued. But we can reduce the risk of lawsuits substantially by doing things in a very forthright manner that allay the fears of people that the ballot boxes might be stuffed. So I like the unanimous requirement because it helps to prevent any appearance or even any actuality of stuffing the ballot boxes by granting waivers in a partisan manner.
Okay, does somebody else want to speak?
I just wanted to say something real quickly.
Charles?
No, a lot of this is predicated on...
I'm sorry, Charles, can you speak a little louder?
Yes, a lot of this is predicated on the precept that we're all trying to prevent litigation in the process of making decisions. Without a uniform standard across the board for all five stations in their decision-making process on waivers, some type of uniform standard, you're going to open yourself up for litigation from the perspective that, well, so-and-so was waived at KPFA, but a similar type applicant didn't get waived at KPFT, and it's just real difficult for me to see how you can grant these waivers without a uniform standard.
Okay.
Carol, it's Carol?
Yeah.
The bylaws do give the LSBs, which don't exist yet, the power to grant waivers in their discretion. So I think there's a discretionary power here that if it can be exercised without giving any appearance or opportunity for using it in a partisan manner, the discretion is there at the local level.
At this point in time, without LSBs being actually enforced, I think that it's a push to make that statement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're mixing two issues here. One is what the criteria are, and the other are who gets, or what number of people on this committee of four gets to make the final determination. So, and I haven't heard a motion.
I move that it be unanimous.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Who is that, David?
Dave, yeah.
Okay.
If I may.
Yes, David.
You know, I understand. I mean, it's a two-edged sword. It cuts both ways. If you have, if it's a 3-4, I mean, a 3-1 or a 4, what's happening is if someone votes against it, it's because they think the person is lying. They feel that the person seeking the waiver is making a mischaracterization of their level of commitment or relationship to the station or a mischaracterization as to their need for the waiver. And I think that it's interesting, if you have it so that one person can scotch it, and any one of the four people, and let's just assume, I don't know that it's fair to, but let's assume that each of the three people appointed from the lab are from different constituencies, you know, competing factions, what have you. I hope that's not the case in a sense, but I'm afraid that it is. Then one of them can exercise as against the others. But if it's unanimous, then they all get screwed on that because they have to all either be liberal in their trust of people or no one gets through. Whereas with a 3-1 vote, any one of those people can scotch it, can use it in a political manner. I think the requiring unanimity will create a more collegial and cooperative environment because everybody's going to have to cut slack for everybody. I think it will allow for a more liberal application of it because the one person that vetoes it is going to be seen to have vetoed that one vote, and it will be, I think, more telling. I think people will be reluctant to start that kind of tit for tat. So I would go for the unanimous just to keep it simple and keep it, you know, bring people together on these issues.
Okay, I have AC. And George, do you want to speak, George?
Yes.
Okay, I have AC and then George.
Okay, I would oppose it for the very reason that that Furtick stated it, because, I mean, nowhere in our political culture, beginning from the Congress on down, is there a requirement for unanimous vote. It's just not a part of the political democracy that we live in. It's a majority vote, and I think that that what this could lend itself to, let's assume that that vote stands at one person in opposition. Well, then it has to be appealed to the to Terry, and if we don't like that, it has to go to the board again. So there's a long built-in process there that could only delay and frustrate the efforts to have this election. So I would, you know, be in favor of a three-person majority, although first I disagree with part of this anyway, but I would agree with a three-person majority, to have a majority vote rather than a full vote.
Okay, George?
Dave, you know, having the Terminator as your new governor may have affected your mind. What planet are you on, man? I mean,
okay,
George.
Let's call him the question.
George, I'm sorry, do you have something to offer?
That's it. I mean, it requires unanimity. As AC so eloquently pointed out, it has no precedent in our democracy and it will not allow for effective, efficient use of our resources or our foundation. Our foundation will work well.
This is Carol. Can I get this back?
Yeah, Carol. Yeah.
There's no appeal process if the four-person committee of the three lab members and the local election supervisors denies the waiver, that's it. So I don't see a delay in that. It would just be they sit down and review the applications and vote on them. And those that they approve are granted waivers, and those that they don't are not granted waivers. I think Dave actually correctly stated it, that using a majority, I mean, using a unanimous vote will promote collegiality and fairness and prevent any one faction or person on that committee from abusing their power.
Okay, can
we move
to vote on this?
Yeah. Let me have one quick comment, please.
Can we vote on it?
I would like to make one quick comment, if I could.
Okay,
just in direct response to something George and AC said. This country, before it was taken over, was a country in which consensus in many of the cultures here was the key, and there's nothing in Pacifica that I have ever seen that lends itself to consensus until this subcommittee came along, because it's the only thing in all of Pacifica where everyone is there for the agreed purpose, same goal, same standards. It's one place where we can try consensus. I think it would be a great opportunity.
Okay, so on that note, can we move to a vote on this? I'm just going to go down the list as I have it in front of me. The motion before us is that the decision as to whether or not to grant a waiver by this four-person committee would have to be unanimous to carry. Okay, is that understood?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Pete?
No.
George?
Oh.
Carol?
Yes.
Janice?
No.
Ray? Oh, Ray's not here. Rob?
No.
AC?
No.
Teresa?
Teresa?
Teresa? Okay, maybe she got off the call. Charles?
No.
David?
Yes.
And myself, yes. So it obviously doesn't carry. It's 1, 2, 3 yeses, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 noes. And I think that's all who's on the call. Yeah, because two people. Teresa, are you there? Okay, she's not there. So that's defeated. Do I hear another motion?
Yeah, Leslie, can I move that that each committee set their criteria and that it be three out of four, a vote of three out of four must be in place to carry the waiver.
Okay, so Rob's motion, is there a second?
Second the motion.
Okay, so the motion by Rob is that each of these local committees consisting of four people would set the criteria for the waiver requirements, and at least three out of four of the members of the committee would have to agree. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And who seconded that?
Janice.
Yes, seconded.
Janice seconded.
Okay, so Pete?
Yes.
George?
Yes.
Carol?
No.
Janice?
Yeah.
Ray is not here. Rob?
Yes.
AC?
Yes.
Teresa?
Yes.
Charles?
Yes.
David?
Sure, why not?
And myself, yes. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 yeses and one no. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Okay, so I think we're done with
in regard to the waiver issue.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I would like this body to not waive the fact we need to wish Pete Bramson a happy 42nd birthday 10 days late.
Okay. Happy birthday, Pete.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Pete.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, very good. Okay, so I think that's it on the waiver issue. We are waiving the waiver issue. Does anybody else have, are there any other concerns related to waivers? Okay, Terry, are you clear about where we are?
Yeah, I think so. The only issue is, it's not really an issue, is some of the labs have been unable to get a quorum and have not been able to even appoint a committee. And I guess if they can't do that, they can't do it. But I think there might have to be some renewed effort to get the labs to have a quorum to appoint a committee.
Okay, that's a good point. All right, let's come back to it if we have time. Okay, how to make that happen. Okay, just moving through the letter from Fink, Kevin Fink, the membership list access he spoke to, are there any issues, outstanding issues there? Is everybody clear about that?
Just give a brief explanation? I'm sorry.
My understanding is, I haven't reread it, so someone should jump in if I got this wrong, is that according to the laws that we operate under, we do have to allow access to the membership list.
Access to whom?
To the people who are running.
Who are
access
running?
To any members, my understanding.
Yes, but he also suggests that we do that in a specific way, by
right.
notifying them that we would supply
right.
the list to a mailing house, so that would handle any mailing on behalf of a member.
Right.
And we would not turn over the list to the member, him or herself. That way we protect our members' privacy.
Right. How do you counter somebody who says, well, that mailing house is too expensive and I want to use someone else?
We do separate mailings from the foundation with the folios, and we have a special discounted mailing or something like that?
You know, the law says that we have to provide a reasonable alternative. If a member can find a cheaper mailing house, I think that would be reasonable, but we would provide the membership list to a mailing house for them.
Right. Okay, again, I just want to make sure Terry is clear on this, since he's the one who has to help the whole foundation.
There are several issues that still need to be resolved. First off, I think Kevin Fink said that you guys as a board might need to amend your privacy policy to deal with this, and I don't know what your privacy policy is. I don't know if someone has a policy journal there that they can check, but the other thing is there are other people who might say that they want access to the list who, as long as it's for a legitimate purpose, we would have no right, the foundation would have no right to deny them to look at and photocopy the list, quite frankly, by law, unless we provide an alternative procedure. For example, a candidate wants to check whether the petition signatures they've gathered are from valid voters, or somebody wants to campaign in a certain neighborhood in a certain city, and they want to see who are members in that city who they can go and visit or write letters to.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than just doing mass mailings, there might be people who could legitimately argue that they want to look at the list to get a small sample, to look at to look up particular people, etc.
Is Dan on here?
Yeah.
What do you think about this? Because I've always, this is Janice, I've always been told that we can't do exactly what Terry is saying we have to do.
No, we don't have to do it. This is Dave. We used,
well, wait, can we get...
I've dealt with this before.
All right, Dan, can we get Dan? First of all, Terry, were you done?
For now, yes. There's more points, but yes.
Okay, so Dan, can you weigh in on this?
Which aspect of this?
On the access to the list. Do we have to provide access? Who do we provide it to, et cetera?
Yeah, my understanding is primarily based upon Kevin's memo, which clearly says that we have to make the membership available, the membership list available to members, though he's recommend very strict set of criteria, which may not actually fulfill the issues or fit with some of the scenarios that Terry's just laid out. I don't know, Dave, do you have some ideas about that?
Well, yeah, it's actually kind of simple. In terms of focusing your mailing to a geographical location, you use the zip code. That's real simple. In fact, zip codes tend to be politically contiguous. As far as the signature checking thing goes, if there's a challenge for a specific signature, that can be produced. But just going hog wild and checking them in general, that's the job of the election supervisor. And unless there's a reason to expect there's violation there, I don't think that falls within the range of reasons for which people might necessarily want to get access to the whole bloody list.
Yeah, I agree with Dave. The well, law is clear. You have to have a reason that to want to communicate with the members, having to do with membership business.
I think.
And if and the foundation can provide a reasonable alternative to you, other than providing you with the list itself. A reasonable alternative is that our neutral election supervisor will check the signatures. A reasonable alternative to wanting to communicate with members in a certain area is to go through the zip codes and put it in to send it to a mailing house. I don't think the issue of campaigning door-to-door in neighborhoods is one that has ever come before the court. But quite frankly, I think that's an unreasonable request of a member, and the court would probably support us in that because of our members.
I know. I don't want anybody running for my local board coming knocking on my door.
Expectations of privacy. I mean, we're not running for the local school board.
No.
We're running for the local station board of a membership organization in a metropolitan area that where the members are something less than 1% of the population, if that.
Yeah, I think that's true, Carol, but I tend to agree with Terry that if we would at least have copies of the membership list that people could go look at without giving them a copy, I think that would make sense.
Well, but there's a problem with that. There's a problem with that.
Okay.
The CPB rules forbid us to give out our members' names and addresses. So we've got a conflict of laws here, and our members also have an expectation of privacy. So if you said, well, you want to look at the list, well, what's looking at the list good for if you're not copying it down? I mean, you know, if you want to go door to door, you have to write down the names and addresses.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not permitted to do that under the CPB rules. So we've got a conflict of laws. And I think that if somebody wanted the actual physical addresses in their possession in order to go door to door rather than communicate by mail, a court would support us in saying that's an unreasonable request.
Can I get on the stand?
Yes.
I want to get on too.
Okay.
Okay.
It's funny, and we can say we don't want people to come to our homes, but I believe that if that were to happen, that somebody might do that. We are Pacifica, and somebody might just decide they're going to go from door to door if they get the mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's too far-fetched.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's a confluence of planets lined up, but I'm wholeheartedly behind what Carol Spooner just said.
Okay, I want that noted. the last sentence mm-hmm. that Janice just said.
Guy down the back to this is Terry.
Okay, AC and then Terry.
It seems to me that we ought to have gotten a legal opinion from Pink, or some other attorney on this question about privacy, because there are people who call in and make their pledges anonymously.
That's
now,
a good point,
what does it mean
too.
send that person
That's a real good point, AC.
Yeah, and so it seems to me to be an issue of privacy, and I think we need a legal ruling on it before we act. But I would like to suggest that an alternative is to have each station to do the mail-ins, several mail-ins out with all the candidates' profile statements in that mail-in.
Well, we're going to do that.
And
anyway.
Nobody.
That's going to happen anyway. I believe there's plans for that.
Well,
that we have an obligation. In the running of these elections to make sure that all the members know who the candidates are.
Yeah.
That mailing will happen. We're talking about a candidate who wants to go beyond that.
Well,
Dave.
I just think that no candidate, if the stations are going to do the mail-in, then no candidate should be allowed to do a mail-in. Because it would seem to me to be in violation of the privacy.
Yeah.
Okay, wait, I'm sorry. Terry wanted to weigh in and then David.
Just one last example. A member, let's say, wants to confirm that they are actually on the list, the voting list. They're not sure when they last gave their contribution in terms of the record date, and they just want to confirm that they have the right mailing address they're on. That member has, under bylaws and law, the right to check. And they could call the station, and the burden would be on the station staff to provide that information. And I should say, BAI and KPFA, they have different policies for how they're dealing with members wanting to know that. BAI, I think they've arranged, Joy has arranged certain hours of the day when there'll be some staff person available to answer such phone calls. At KPFA, you send an email and you get response a week later. There could be a flood of people trying to confirm right before November 21st, like, you know, next couple of days, trying to find out if they're eligible to vote. Do they have the right to come down to the station and look at their list? Will there be some staff who will answer their question individually? I don't know. I'm just saying that there might be other people besides candidates who would have a legitimate reason to look at the list.
This is Carol.
I'm sorry. I think David was next.
Yeah,
Carol.
I mean, our duty is not to, like, immediately open the door and say, here, look at everything. Our duty is to provide reasonable access. And I think that... you know, the ideas that have been discussed, I mean, are pretty straightforward. Why is somebody going to want the list? And if they're going just to check their name, they don't need to see the whole bloody list. I agree, however, with Terry that there will be a flood, if there hasn't already been, of people seeking to confirm whether they have voting status. And that needs to be accommodated. But I think it's a separate issue. And it's one thing to say, I'm entitled to find out if I'm a member. It's another thing for me to say, I'm entitled to access to the membership list. And the reason for that, the policy underlying that, I believe, is fundamentally to inform the fellow members about a controversy that's not being, you know, given to them. Information is not being given to them otherwise. And the mailing house does that. I really don't think it needs to be that complicated.
Carol here.
Carol, yeah.
If somebody wants to see our membership list, they have to state the purpose. If their purpose is to find out if they're on the list, we are entitled by law to provide them with a reasonable alternative way of finding that out. A reasonable alternative way of finding that out is calling during specific business hours or sending an email and getting a response. We're not required to give our mailing list or our membership list to the members. We're required to provide them with a reasonable alternative way to accomplish their purpose.
Okay, folks, it's a little after 8. We have a few more issues to talk about. Does anybody have a motion they want to make on this? Because we don't necessarily need one.
I don't think we need one. Dan is, you know, we have a privacy policy, and Dan, I think, can inform the station managers about what to do if somebody wants to send a mailing to the members.
Move the agenda?
But could you clarify for us what precisely
Kevin Fink's
here?
Kevin Fink's recommendation is that if somebody wants to send a mailing to members,
right,
that we inform them that we'll
provide the mailing list to a mailing house for them.
So if that's okay with folks, we can proceed. Okay?
Well,
good.
One other question on that. How do you address the question of a centralized mailing house as opposed to the Marin Barry resolution that passed at the board in New York that said that these mailings should be done from the local area?
That's another issue that we're coming to. And that had to do with, I believe that had to do with where the votes are counted.
Right.
Not where they were mailed out
from. Well, according to Barry, is also where they mailed out.
Yeah, but...
we're not there yet.
First of all, we're not there.
Okay.
Separate issue. Yeah.
Yeah, typically a mailing list would be retained in one central location, but the actual mailing to a local station area would typically be done from that local station area because that's where the nonprofit status of the local station is located with the post office. So typically we would do that mailing from the local station area as a matter of logistical and financial convenience.
Okay.
Can I jump in to clarify?
Yes, and then we really should move on to the other issues.
Thank you, Dan.
So the cheapest way to do this is almost certainly going to be to have all the ballots and envelopes printed at a single print shop that is near a particular mail house so that all the ballots would be mailed nationally using the Pacifica Foundation nonprofit status rather than a particular station nonprofit status. To have them printed at five different print shops or to have them shipped to different mail houses around the country just so they can be put in the postal system from different locations would cost a lot of money and would not speed things up. And so for efficiency's sake, we're probably going to try and do a single print shop, a single mail house.
Well,
okay.
Then that would be in violation of the bullet policy unless they reverse it.
No, it would not.
That would be a slightly different matter than the example that I was dealing with, AC. But
yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I think that,
But I thought, Dan, you were talking about what the usual process is of getting a mailing out to a given station's list. This is a different situation.
Yes. The scenario that Terry outlined is definitely a different situation. That's correct.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay.
I would rather go with your suggestion, Dan. You know.
All right. First of all,
I'm confused.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know what
we were talking about. We've mixed again apples and oranges, and I'm sorry that I lost control of the meeting here for a minute. Not as bad as we have sometimes, but we were talking about the right of people who are members to access the list, especially in this case, people who are running for the local station boards. Can they access the list if they want to do a mailing? And I think the general sense that I'm hearing from people is that we should go along with Kevin Fink's recommendation. That is, that if somebody wants to do their own mailing at their own expense, that the mailing could be done by the mail house. So we're not actually literally turning over the list, but they're accessing the list by being allowed to do a mailing. If they say they have a cheaper mail house that they want to use, obviously we would be flexible. That'd be fine also. But I'm basically hearing that people are okay with Kevin's recommendation.
Yeah,
and that would just have to protect the privacy policy also.
Right.
Okay, so if we can move on. There are still several remaining issues. I don't know if those beeps are people coming or going. So
this is Rob. My battery died on me. I had to come in on another phone.
Oh, okay. Welcome back.
I apologize.
Okay. So the next issue had to do with the minimum membership contribution, and this also relates to the electronic fund transfer. Teresa, do you want to?
Well, our local advisory board is very concerned about this, and we passed a resolution because we could anticipate that during this pledge drive, we said, oh, pledge, go ahead, pledge big, and we offer the opportunity for people to put it on an electronic funds transfer. So they might pledge $120 a year, which is $10 a month. So
I think in the past it's never been a problem that once you agree to the electronic funds transfer, you are officially a member and your membership for that year starts. But if you're just starting the EFT, then technically for voting purposes, you have not put in $25.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And my local advisory board is very concerned that these people that have been told during pledge drives that they can vote when they pledge, that if they've done EFT, that they be allowed to vote.
Or credit card over time.
Or credit card over time.
Oh.
Mrs. Carroll?
Yeah?
Two things. I understand that everybody that pledged by EFT or overtime was sent a postcard last week telling them of the November 21st deadline to get at least $25 into the station. That's the first thing. But the second,
I'm sorry, Carol, everybody at every station?
No, at KPFT, which made this mistaken announcement over the air.
Okay.
They sent a correction by postcard last week.
Are you saying that none of the other stations made this mistake over the air?
Not that I'm aware of. But there's a deeper issue here. We've never had members before. We used the word membership, but it had no legal meaning in the past. So because we called people members didn't mean anything. It now does mean something that is defined in the bylaws. And what it means is that within the 12 months prior to the cutoff date, the station has received your $25 contribution. If you say that a $25 contribution is received by a promise to pay it over the next year, then you have to look forward and say, oh, over the next year we'll get it. But at the same time, you have to look backwards to see if you got it over the past year. So essentially, we're putting ourselves in the position of granting people 2 years voting rights for 1 year's membership contribution. It's contrary to the bylaws. It's also just simply not feasible. It's not practical. It's not the way. You're not buying a washing machine over time here. We're granting people voting rights based on their contribution in the previous 12 months, and their membership is defined by their having contributed that money in the previous 12 months. So I've been informed that KPFT has corrected their error and informed everyone. And going forward, this should not be a problem, even though, you know, we're new at this and our mistakes are inevitable. I think everybody's been informed, and it's fair to give people 1 year's vote for 1 year's contribution.